Morning. First question, does everybody have either a folder or this morning's lesson? Lesson number three is what we're on. I have copies of just lesson three if that's what you need. Just let me know and I'll get you one. Excellent. I love making copies of these and not needing them. That's fantastic. Oh, you guys haven't been around. You need a folder. You're welcome. Okay. So, Dennis, would you lead us up with a prayer?
Our Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this day and all you do for us and the blessings that we have from you. For your love for us and your patience with us. Father, we're very thankful that on this day we've been gathered together here to study together and worship you. And we ask for your guidance as we do these things. Help us, Father, when we put away the fears of this world for this time period and just think about you and focus on you and inspire you to grow stronger in your ways. Help us, Father, to love you the way we say we do. In Christ's name.
Amen. All right. So we're going to pick up in Exodus chapter 6. What we've got so far is that the Israelites have become a great multitude in Egypt. Egyptians then oppress the Israelites because they're afraid of them, making them slaves, eventually killing their firstborn boys when they're born, or trying to. Moses is born and he is protected. He grows up in the Egyptian royalty. And he has to make a decision as to whether he's going to be a Hebrew or an Egyptian. And he chooses to be a Hebrew and thinks he's going to lead the people. But instead, everybody finds out, have you killed somebody? And he flees out of fear. And so for 40 years then, he is away in the land of Midian. And 40 years later, God calls him to lead his people out of Egypt. He says, well, there's all these issues. Who am I going to say is calling me? And so God gives him his name, which is Yahweh, Jehovah, I am that I am. It gives him some miraculous signs, gives him Aaron as a mouthpiece, and he tells him, this isn't going to be easy. I don't know that that's not the best term. It's not that this isn't going to be easy. He's telling him that Pharaoh's not going to make this easy. Pharaoh's going to be difficult about this. So Moses goes back to Egypt. He gathers all the Hebrews, the Israelites, together. He tells them, God has sent me. God is going to deliver you. They get excited. They believe him. He goes to Pharaoh, says, let my people go. And Pharaoh says, now I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to make it harder on the people. When the people realize that now things are harder and they're being threatened, they go to Moses and they blame him. This is all your fault. Moses goes to God and blames him, saying, this is all your fault. And that's where we ended in Exodus chapter 5. And so a quick reminder of where we're at on our map. Moses was down over here. In the last chapter, he has come back over here. I would like you to pay attention that Goshen is up in this area. The pyramids are down here. I don't know where Pharaoh's at. But there's a good chance Pharaoh's not up here. So when we look at this, there's going to be a divide as to where they are at as we go through the plagues. And that's what we're going to look at, really, is the first nine plagues. That's our main thing. And the nine plagues, the tenth plague, and the crossing of the Red Sea, this stuff is absolutely massively huge. This is a crucial point in God's word and mankind's history. All right. This is where God is going to reveal who he is. Do you remember what Pharaoh's question was? When Moses comes and says, God has said, let the people go out for a three-day journey and worship him. What was Pharaoh's response? Who is God that I should obey him and let the people go? This is the answer. And it's not Pharaoh's answer. This is the answer. This is the answer for anybody today who says, well, why should I serve God? Look at the plagues. Why do I have to obey him? The plagues are the answer for Israel. The plagues are the answer for Christians. The plagues are the answer for the Egyptians. It's the answer for any non-believer. And it's different than what we've seen before. We've seen God perform miracles, powerful, massive miracles. What big, huge miracles did Sean get to cover in the book of Genesis? Creation's pretty big. And how many people witnessed it? None. All right, what's another big, huge miracle in the book of Genesis? Flood. And how many people got to witness that? 8. Now, that is the entirety of mankind as a result of the flood. But overall, we're not talking about something where most people saw it. This is a very small thing. Now, the plague, they're different. This is something that is for the nations of the world to see. This is something for Israel to see and tell their children and their grandchildren. This is something that the nations up in the land of Canaan are aware of. When we get up there over 40 years later, they're going to remember the crossing of the Red Sea. They're going to be aware of these events. So this is big stuff where God is showing, let me tell you who I am and why you should do what I tell you to do. All right. But I started off in the wrong place in the lesson, and we start off in Exodus chapter 6, and this is God answering the people blaming Moses and Moses blaming God. So question number one, how had God treated Israel and Moses differently than he had Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? So this is his response now. He's telling them, okay, you guys are blaming me. What's he tell them? I've given you guys a special name. If you look at Abraham and Jacob and Isaac, they knew me by El Shaddai, God Almighty, which is true enough. He says, but that's not my name. My name is Jehovah. My name is Yahweh. I am that I am. I've told you that. Now, what's that mean to Moses? What should that mean to Moses? Yes. And in fact, it is a next level relationship. Because when we get later on in the book of Exodus and there's debate about Moses and whether he's really lifting himself up and shouldn't be doing that, there's going to be discussions. God's going to say, look, there's nobody on earth like this guy. I speak to him face to face. I speak to him in a very personal relationship. Moses has a very special relationship. Don't blame God. Don't think God's not there, because that's what Moses is saying, is you're not doing what you said you would do. He said, if I were there, I would tell him, Moses, remember when I told you that this wasn't going to go really easy, that Pharaoh's going to reject you? Here it is. It's happening. Yes, Patricia.
Is it kind of like me calling you Mr. Hagen or Jared instead of sir, or people?
I always love the people one. It's like that. It's a little bit closer relationship. You have a little bit more intimacy in it. Yes. Okay, so in his response in question number two then, how is he responding specifically to the people? God tells Moses, I want you to go tell the people some things. And so what does he tell them that they need to know? Oh, I forgot the question. I forgot my first warm-up question. Did you do your lesson? Raise of hands. If you didn't have your lesson, obviously you couldn't have done it. But otherwise, just be prepared every week. At some point in the lesson, I'll probably remember to ask. And it's better if you've done it. It's much better. Because we're not going to get a chance to read all the text. You need to do the lessons. Okay. So then, in response, in Exodus 6, verses 1 through 8, is God's response to the blame that was being tossed around at the end of chapter 5. What was God's answer to their blame and accusations? Yes, I have a plan. We're not off script. This is the way it's supposed to go, right? So what I see is, really, he tells Moses, I've made a covenant and I'm going to keep it. He tells Moses, I have heard their groanings. And then he tells them, all right, now you go tell them these things. I will bring you out from under the burden of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage. I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. You will be my people. You will know that I am the Lord your God, and I'm going to give you the land. So they're blaming Moses. Moses is blaming God, and he's saying, I'm still going to do it.
But he starts out with telling him to just watch what he's going to do.
Sit back and watch, yes. Yeah, this is big. They're not going to set themselves free. God's going to do it for them.
I will set you free. Let me just teach the Egyptian a lesson.
It is going to be teach the Egyptians and everybody. And I don't know if you noticed, but in chapter 6 and verse 1, there was a change that occurred. It was, you know, let my people go. And then he says here, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for under compulsion he will let them go, and under compulsion he will drive them out of his land. There's a little change. It's not just he's going to let you guys go. He is going to make you go when we're all said and done with this. Now, that's hard for them to perceive how that's going to happen. And before we get into the plagues, I should point out that at the end of chapter 6, there's a genealogy. And if you want, I've charted it all out, what the genealogy says. If you want a copy of that, I can get you a copy of it. But what's important to me is these are partial genealogies, and this is a good illustration of how we know genealogies aren't the way we normally think of. I look at a genealogy and if so-and-so gives birth to so-and-so, there's no way there's somebody in between. But in this one, we can definitely see there has to be somebody in between. Anybody know why we know there has to be somebody in between this genealogy as we go through, especially Levi's genealogy down to Moses? Actually, it's not even down to Moses. It's really focused on Aaron, because Aaron, it talks about his children. It doesn't talk about Moses' children. Anybody can see why? Well, I'll tell you why. It tells us the ages. And if you do a nice little thing, you say, all right, so Levi leaves Egypt. If on the day that Levi is leaving Egypt, what? Well, I'm not saying it right, I know. I should probably try to say it right. Okay, when Levi comes to Egypt from the land of Canaan, all right, so if Kohath was born that day, because he's going to be included in the 70 that leave Canaan, come down to Egypt. So Kohath is born that day. It tells us that Kohath lives to be 133 years. And this is just ridiculous, because that's not what happened. But if Kohath, on the day he dies, his wife gives birth to Amram. And then Amram, on the day he dies, gives birth to Moses. And by the way, you all know that's ridiculous, right? The odds of those things happening. So, if we did that, what we have is Kohath lives 133 years. Amram lives 137 years. Moses, we know, is 80 years old when he comes down to Pharaoh and says, let my people go. How long were they in the land of Egypt? 430 years. How long would it be if we added up 133, 137, and 80?
350.
There is clearly some things that are happening in between here. And so when we read genealogies, I read it as this has to be this person's literal son, and it can be his grandson or his great-grandson, and is showing who they are related to, how it traces back to Levi. So there are going to be, so when you read genealogies, just understand that genealogies are a little different than the way that we think. Okay. I've lost track of where I'm at. Okay, so at the end of chapter 6, he reminds us, okay, this is Aaron and Moses. This is Aaron and Moses who's going to Pharaoh. He catches us back up, says, all right, now here's what happens. Moses and Aaron go before Pharaoh, and they say, let my people go. And Pharaoh says to Moses, oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm sorry. I get eager. I get excited. So in Exodus chapter 7, verses 3 through 5, God explains, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. He's charged Moses, by the way, back in chapter 6 and verse 13. He has charged him, you go do this. All right, no more excuses, you just go do this. So God's explaining to him again, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. Why is he going to harden Pharaoh's heart?
So he can demonstrate his power.
Yeah. There's a purpose to this. It's so that everybody will see my great power. Okay? But our biggest question, of course, is how is he going to harden Pharaoh's heart? And does he give an answer? Not right here. And we only get hints of an answer. If there's any answer in here, we're only given hints throughout this, but we're going to pay attention to this because it always catches our attention. I remember asking about it last week because my memory sometimes can't even go a week back. And last week I asked what our problem is, and some people said, what if he does that to me? It's a good question. All right. Yes, go ahead, Ryan.
Sometimes I think we kind of start with this thought. We think of maybe this idea that Pharaoh is a soft and gentle and kind person and slave, completely opposite of his nature. And if you look back at what Pharaoh or this probably father or grandfather had done, it was pretty ruthless stuff as far as the way that they treated the slaves, killing the firstborn. I don't think as far as on this spectrum, it's not moving this back too much.
So to be fair, now we are talking about a different Pharaoh than the one who said, let's kill the kids, right? But we are talking about pharaohs, and they weren't exactly known for the great compassion, and this one's not going to be known for that either. Yeah, Sean.
Well, I think we'll get into it more, too. It doesn't say the Lord hardened his heart until the sixth one. So up until then, we see there's instances where it says Pharaoh hardened his heart. There's two of them.
Well, now you're... No, stop, Sean. Stop. I didn't come in here when you were doing Genesis and say, Joseph's going to make Egypt great. Like, I didn't do that.
Well, it goes with that question.
It does, but it's at that point. Has God explained it? And the answer is no. And so what I'm really trying to do with that was say patience. And you guys just didn't get it. You didn't get the hint. Yeah, but we should just be paying attention. Okay, that's something we care about. Look at each time when it talks about their hardening of the heart. Look at it to see what's happening. Okay, so now Moses comes in. And this isn't actually the first plague. But Moses comes in and he says, let my people go. And Pharaoh says, what miracle are you going to perform? So what's the first sign that Moses and Aaron give to Pharaoh?
Throwing his rod down and test his...
Right. Now, this one was already something God had shown him. You can do this. And God had had him do this in front of the people of Israel. And this has convinced them, along with two other miracles. So now with Pharaoh, he throws his rod down and it becomes a snake. And why is Pharaoh not terribly impressed by that?
His magicians could do the same thing.
And I heard as I came in the question about the magicians. Was it real? And I've heard a lot of people try to explain it away that if you take a snake and you hypnotize it, which by the way, I want to know who tried that, but you hypnotize it and then you throw it on the ground, it can wake up and then become a snake, right? I don't know why we're spending a lot of time thinking about that. Is the point here at all how they accomplished that? Not at all. Is it possible for them to have taken a piece of wood and throw it down and it become a serpent? Maureen says no. Rod says no. I say absolutely it's possible. It says they did it. Okay. You need to remember that there are powers in the world. And God is not the only power. God is the ultimate power. Is it possible for a human being to take chains and tear them apart? How do we know? Because a demon-possessed man did that. It is entirely possible because we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 that when the people were worshiping other gods, those other gods were not just no gods, they were demons. There's something behind the pagan world. But the key here is not how they did it. I don't know if it was a trick. I don't know if it was through the power of demonic beings. I don't know that. Here's what I know. It didn't compare. So it doesn't impress Moses. Doesn't impress Pharaoh because he's able to throw... It doesn't impress Pharaoh because his magicians are able to make it the same thing happen. But why should it have impressed Pharaoh? Because what happens next? Only one rod comes back. The others get eaten. And that's a sign saying, yeah, you've got power, but it doesn't compare. And that's where we're going to start off with the plagues. The plagues are not meant to be something where you memorize a list. Here's what the plagues happen. What you really should be doing is doing, I would say, at least two things. One, you should be focusing on the differences because there's little nuances, little things that are going on. This is a progression. And the other one is you should be visualizing this. Imagine what it was like to witness these things. Okay. So we get to the first plague. What's the first plague? See, water turned into blood. And so if we look over at Exodus chapter 7, verse 20 and 21. So Moses and Aaron did even as the Lord had commanded, and he lifted up the staff and struck the water that was in the Nile in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants. And all the water that was in the Nile was turned to blood. The fish that were in the Nile died, and the Nile became foul, so that the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile, and the blood was through all the land of Egypt. Down in verse 24, so all the Egyptians dug around the Nile for water to drink, for they could not drink of the water of the Nile. So you have them watching, and just the water turns to blood, which is terrifying. All the fish now are suffocating. They're dying. And they can't find any water. Now, that's not entirely accurate. They're struggling to find any water, right? Okay. So who did this impact?
The Nile God.
Well, we could go through and we could talk about the various gods of the Egyptians and how this is really all going to be powerful signs against them. Yeah? But who does this impact? Because I don't think the Nile God really cared. Everybody. Everybody's. This is not something where, you know, Pharaoh's in a room and he sees a snake. This is why we're now to the plagues. It's because this is impacting everybody. Okay. So why then was Pharaoh not terribly impressed by this?
His magicians could do the same thing,
which I just want to know where'd they get their water. Yeah. Besides how they do it, I don't know where'd you get your water. But they managed to do this. Why should that not have impressed Pharaoh? When the Egyptians are able to do this, why should Pharaoh have still said, you know, I think I should let the people go? Sean?
I envision them as turning a small portion of water where here this is the Nile.
Size certainly has an impact on things. But there's another really obvious thing to me that Pharaoh should have said, yeah, very.
Well, I wish he would have asked them to turn it back.
That's it. That's the key. Their magicians are able to do some things, but they can't undo what God does. So the snake, they couldn't undo the snake. Their snakes got eaten by God's snake. They are able to reproduce the blood, but they can't make the blood go away. Now, through the plagues, we don't get timelines. I don't know how long it takes from beginning of the first plague to the end. And this one, it just tells us 7 days later for the next plague. What that doesn't tell us is, was it 7 days of we got blood for water? I don't know the answer for that. But 7 days later, we get the second plague. All right. So what is the second plague?
Frogs.
So chapter 8 and verse 3. The Nile will swarm with frogs, which will come up and go into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and into the houses of your servants and on your people and into your ovens and into your kneading bowls. And it's important that it added all of that because I kind of think frogs are cute. But not then. That, I don't want to be gross, but for a lot of these plagues, think as you walk, crunch. Oh, that nasty, nasty sound and feeling everywhere. That's their plague. Okay. So that answers, by the way, how bad it got and who it impacted. It impacted everybody. And it impacted, it's worth noting, everybody's homes. You go to the British Museum, you'll find tiny little idols and an inscription from the Egyptian priests saying, put these in your home to protect them from curses and from demons. And here they have all these little idols in their homes, And the frogs come in anyway, because you can't stop God. All right, so what then happens differently during this plague? So now that we're in the second plague, we can start talking about differences. Anybody notice any differences from this one and the first plague? This is the first time when Pharaoh cares at all. I mean, he didn't care about the blood. He just goes away. But this time he says, okay, I'll let the people go. That's the first time he says he'll do that. This is the first plague where God says, hey, you can put an end to it. Just tell me when. Which, by the way, most ridiculous thing. Why say tomorrow? Honestly, if I want the frogs gone, I'd say, now would be nice. Lisa?
Uh-huh.
It was going to go to the end. Now the question is, how did we get there? And here we can look at it. Pharaoh is not going to let the people go. Why not? It says his heart is hardened, right?
Says he, Pharaoh.
And that's a very important thing, because we're going to see that it's just interposed. It changes, interposed, interchanges. Sometimes it's going to say God hardens his heart. Sometimes it's going to say Moses hardens his heart. Who hardened Pharaoh's heart right here?
Pharaoh.
I would say it's not just Pharaoh. God's saying, I'm going to do it. This is what God said he would do. How did Pharaoh's heart get hardened here? What caused his heart to change? What?
Are you talking about changed, taking back his...
Yeah, so he said, I'm going to let the people go, but then he hardens his heart. What caused him to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. It's not what it... I mean, that could be, but that's not what it says. We just have to stick with what the text says. What's the text say?
Well, it seems to say that when the frogs did go away, this rested... caused them to say, oh, all right, I'm not going to worry about this anymore.
And that's going to happen with every plague. Every plague, it's going to be after the plague ends that Pharaoh says, wait a second. And he rethinks it. Was that what you were going to say, Brian? Yeah. So it says here in... I'm on the wrong for chapter 8, verse 15. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart and did not listen to them as the Lord had said. So it's him hardening his heart. I think it's still God, because God's the one who made the frogs die and go away. But it's Pharaoh's responsibility. Pharaoh's hardening his heart. All right, so what's the third plague then? Yes.
I don't understand what you're saying. Another thought, you know, when I look at it, I don't see it saying that the Lord hardened his heart until, like I said, plague 6. And then again in 8 and 9. I think we can also maybe look at it as God's giving him the opportunities, and he turns against God, turns against God, turns against God, and God says, okay, you've had your chance, and now I will use you. And I will use you in the way that I'm going to use other people, that he's used other people to accomplish his will.
Right. In my opinion, Lisa, to answer your question, I think what we're really looking at is God has chosen the right person for this task. He has chosen somebody he knows is going to respond in this way for these circumstances. And the question we had last time was, who's responsible? And it's saying Pharaoh's doing it. Now, God had said before, I'm going to be the one who's doing it. And yes, he's going to show that on a few occasions he's going to be the one who does it. But I think that what we're looking at here is, last week the question was, is Pharaoh innocent because God made him do it? And the answer is no. God's not making him have a hardened heart, but he is hardening his heart, and Pharaoh is responsible for that. Alex, I should have just put big letters, patience, because it's just not working. Go ahead, Alex.
All right.
One of the things I see there just made me think of, like, why make the point of the land stink after the frogs have died and they've been putting deep? Why make that point? It's like, it's one of those things where it's kind of obvious. But all I can think about is when Moses writes this, he's putting in the idea that there's lasting effects of these plagues. It's not just frogs came in, then we swept them out. There's a lasting effect. And you'll see that in the other plagues, which I'm sure you're going to get to about the lasting effect.
Right. This is going to impact Egypt. And I think the other reason is to give us senses. This is awful. This was really, really hard time to be in Egypt. All right, so what plague am I on? Third. Good. Time's no issue. Third plague. What's the third plague? All right. Lice. Third plague is lice. Some translations will say gnats. As in nasty. Okay, so we've got these bugs everywhere, and it's similar to the one like flies, but how's this one different? What's different about this one? Marcus?
With the plague itself, it's literally make dust come up from the land, and all the dust turns into lice. So it's kind of a thing of, you think about dust in your house, like, that comes back, like, you dust one weekend, the next weekend, you probably have the dust again. All over the house. Just imagine your house being covered with gnats instead of this. And that's literally what they have to do.
It's getting to the immense size of it, right? I mean, just everywhere, can't avoid it. But there's something you've got to that's one of the differences. Rosa, then Dennis. I'll come back to that one. Dennis, is that what you have? One of the differences, this one had nothing to do with water. Back in those days, you got to understand, they think of a god of this, a god of water. All right, everything had been done, had dealt with water, and now this plague is, no, it's dust, the earth. And then the magicians try to do it, and they can't reproduce it. And they say, this is the finger of God. So there's little differences occurring with each plague, Ryan.
I was going to say that I'll skip ahead and answer part of the pain, which is there's a progression here. At the beginning, before plague one, the Israelites don't even trust Moses. It seems as if maybe their lesson is taught by the end here, the third plague, that plagues are presented that can't be replicated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the end of plague 10, the Israelites are following Moses and Aaron, you know, wholeheartedly.
We're going to have to get the people to follow them, and I want to come back to that in a second. Marcus?
I'm trying to think back off what he said. As far as the progression goes, we see the progression for basically almost everybody in this story except the Pharaoh. Not to jump ahead again, but I mean, that's kind of, that made me think of that. Everybody kind of changes their mindset, even the magicians that were kind of going in their mind, strive for strive with God. Now it's just like...
That's sort of true and sort of not. Because what we see is we're going to see that the people, there are going to be people that have hard hearts as well, all the way when we get to the hail. And what we're going to also see is that Pharaoh is changing. He is changing through this. And he is ultimately going to make the decision, but he is also being very much the same. Okay, so I have 5 minutes, 10 minutes to explain that. Right, so third plague. Fourth plague. What is the fourth plague? Flies. How's this plague different? Suddenly now, the Hebrews are not facing this plague. Now, this hasn't been dealt with, but what does that mean about the first three plagues? How do you think the Israelites are feeling about Moses now? I mean, they had to go get their own straw, and they're like, Moses! And they go blame Moses for everything that's happening, but now they're the ones who are also dealing with blood for water, frogs, and the lice. Boy, they couldn't have been in a very good mood. But this one, everything changes, and God is illustrating that he is not just some huge, powerful force that can't control his devastation and it's just this big, sweeping blow. He is aiming. He has control of this. And he says, all right, it's not going to happen to them. It's only going to happen to you Egyptians. And so that's our big difference here, Sean.
I think it goes back to partly to when God answered Moses that first question of I am God. It's when he answers Job, what does he say? Well, let me explain what's going on. No, he says, I am God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's this first bit. No, I am God.
Right. And it changes the way I feel about Israel when I think about them going through all of this. In some ways, I think they should be just, why would they ever test God again? But in other ways, I can understand why they would say when they get out in the wilderness, you've brought us out here to kill us. This is what they're experiencing, who God is. All right, Dennis.
This is where we start assuming that God will take care of his people.
Yes, and that's very important, very important. So Pharaoh's going to say here, you can, I'll let you guys go, but you need to stay close. So now Pharaoh's starting to make more compromises. It's not just this lie, I'm going to let you go, but you got to stay close. And Moses tells him that won't work because of what we're offering. All right, so then what's the fifth? We did flies. What's the fifth plague then? This one's the pestilence, right? So all the animals now are getting, the beasts are getting a disease, and it's killing them very, very quickly. But again, not to God's people. And the difference on this one is that Pharaoh actually sins to see if that's the case. So didn't say that before, but Pharaoh's now looking to see, is this really God choosing these people? And the answer is yes, but that's not enough. He still won't let the people go. All right, so what's the sixth plague? Boils. And so Moses takes dust and he throws the dust in the air and it just scatters from there all over the land. And when it lands, you get these horrible, awful sores on your body. And how is this one different, Bonnie?
This one's different. Well, the magicians are no longer able to understand the
magicians. Yeah, so the magicians had been able to repeat things, but now they are impacted, and they can't even stand there. You had something else. Yes.
He doesn't take dust. He takes soot from a kiln.
I'm sorry, you're right.
This is probably where they built the bricks that Pharaoh has made them make.
That's an interesting thought.
There's a little bit of poetry there, taking the ashes of the work that he's made them do and turning it against them.
Yeah, and he's really taking there's so much poetic justice in all of this that's going on. God had made Egypt rich, and God's now going to make Egypt poor. I'll stop there. But, okay, so we're on the boils. And what is interesting to me is during the boils one, if you go down towards the end there in chapter 9 at this point, something God says is, Pharaoh, I'd like you to know, I'm holding back. At that point, that would have been terrifying to think, wait, he's holding back? Our sheep, our cattle, our camels, our horses, our donkeys, they're all dying. We've had a miserable time. We've been sick with these boils. And he says, I'm holding back. If I had unleashed everything, you'd be gone. I'm going to unleash more on you. That would have gotten my attention. So the next one, what is the seventh plague then?
Hail.
I love storms, so this one speaks to me quite a bit. What's different about this one? No. That's, technically, I guess the others hadn't had fire in them. I hadn't thought about that, Rob.
Everyone had an opportunity to protect themselves, to heed what God had warned, even the Egyptians.
This was the first plague you had a choice. Everybody had a choice. You don't have to deal with this one exactly. You can survive it, right? All you have to do is understand that about this time tomorrow, there's going to be a storm that is absolutely deadly if you're caught in it. So stay inside. Get your animals inside. Get your people inside. Your servants inside. And then it tells us something about some of the Egyptians. What do we find out about some of the Egyptians?
They did not fear God.
Some of them did. And some of them did not. Some of them still hadn't figured it out. So it's not just Pharaoh. Others have hardened their hearts as well, and they're not paying attention to what's going on and its significance. So that's our seventh plague. And the other difference, by the way, is Pharaoh then now acknowledges something, his own fault. He says, I have sinned. Yeah, I have sinned. We're wrong, I'm wrong, God is right. But he still hardens his heart. And so we get to the eighth plague. And what's the eighth plague? Locusts. Where's the locusts come from? This was an interesting plague to me because it was a plague of anticipation. All night long, you have this wind just blowing in from the east, and you wake up the next day, and there are locusts so much that you can't see the ground. And with a difference on this one is Pharaoh hurries. Pharaoh knows locusts. He hurries and says, "Take them away." And so then a wind blows them west. This is the first plague that goes back where it came from. All right. And then finally, the ninth plague. That's the last one we're going to cover this morning. What's the ninth plague?
Darkness.
Darkness. And he tells us it's going to be so thick you can feel it. For 3 days, nobody goes outside. It's just utter, complete darkness. But Israel had lights. Yeah, I wonder what that looked like. I wonder what a lot of this looked like. Through here, and I didn't get a chance to look at all of this, but through here, Pharaoh first says, you guys can go, but stay close. And then he says, you guys can go. And he says, but who's going to go? And they say, we're going to take our women and our children. He's like, no, you're not. I like the New King James Version on that one. He says, God better be with you if I ever let that happen. Which, by the way, he is going to let that happen. And God is going to be with him. And he's going to regret that statement. And then he's going to say, okay, you can go, but your animals can't go. And that's with this last one. He says, you guys can go, but your animals cannot. You see what he's trying to do is he's trying to make sure that they come back. He's trying to keep hold of them. Okay? Why does Moses say that's not sufficient? It's not sufficient for us to go without taking all of our animals, all of them. That's a really important statement. Think about this right now. What do the people of Israel know about God to this point?
He requires a sacrifice.
They know he requires a sacrifice. What does he want?
Pleasure.
They got that much. They don't really know what he wants. What does he want morally? They don't have a law. All they know is this God is God. He's got a lot of power. We're going to go out there. We're going to figure out what he wants. It's very interesting where they're at right now. This is not, and I think this is very pivotal for us today. This is not about, I like what this God has to say, so I'm going to follow him. This is God. I'd better listen to what he has to say. And that's the answer throughout this. The question was, who is God? And this is the answer. This is God, and this is why you obey him. Not because you like what he has to say, not because you agree with it, not because it makes you feel good, but because this is God, and you don't dare oppose him. You don't dare go against him. Now, there's a lot that God's going to then teach them and say, okay, now, I've shown you all this power. Let me show you about my tenderness. Let me show you that I'm making you my family, my children. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to do so much for you. But right now, all they know is God is really, really scary powerful. All right, any lessons that we can get from this as we wrap this up from these plagues? Rob?
I think the idea of worship. Moses maybe doesn't completely understand that God demands everything from us in our worship, not to leave anything behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have these strings attached. Well, I'll worship, I'll make it in a sense convenient. But so maybe the application for us here is is that when God asks us, demands our worship, he demands everything about us.
Moses certainly sounds like he's ready to give everything. Whatever it is that God asks, I'm going to give. And I've got to tell you, I'm impressed with Moses. Moses has done a lot of things that we weren't impressed with earlier, right? A lot of excuses. God keeps telling Moses, go back and do the exact same thing. Go back to Pharaoh and say, let my people go. At some point, don't you think you would go to God and say, that's not working? But Moses has stopped doing that. And there's a recognition that God has a plan. And by the way, when God tells you to do something, it doesn't have to make sense. You do it. It will work out in the end. All right, that's where we're going to have to stop. Next time, we can slow down a little bit. We're going to focus on just this last plague and the Passover.